This is Including You, the new series from Lead at Any Level. Including You features stories from chief diversity officers and other executives who are creating inclusive cultures in their organizations. Our goal is to show what's working in companies just like yours, to give you the tools you need to keep pushing for progress in your own workplace. We want to create belonging and opportunity for everyone, including you. And now here's your host, Amy C. Wanninger.
Welcome back to Including You. I'm your host, Amy C. Wanninger, the Inclusion Catalyst. My guest today is my friend and colleague, Marta Miranda Straub. She's the founder and president of Catapult Now LLC, where she offers organizational development and leadership training services to for-profit and nonprofit organizations. Marta is celebrating her 50th year in this work. She is amazing, and I'm excited for you to meet her. Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Amy. I really appreciate the invitation. I so admire you and your work and what you bring to the table at Leading at Any Level. So really honored to be on your podcast with you. Thank you.
I am honored to have you here. The feeling is mutual. And I'm so excited to talk to you today about the work that you're doing with Catapult. Now, you've had a very eclectic career, but the common thread is really social justice, equality, and this evolution of cultures of belonging throughout.
Right.
And so I wanted to talk to you a little bit about why is this work so important to you personally, and why is it important to the clients that you work with?
Sure. Thank you. I've had multiple roles. 50 years is a long time, but all of those roles have been congruent with my core values and diversity and inclusion, social and economic justice, gender justice, including anti-racism work and anti-sexist work, and inclusive work has been at the core of everything I done, from immigration reform to domestic violence to really leading advocacy and activist efforts. So it is core to who I am. I am an immigrant. I came to this country at age 12. I'm a refugee, political refugee from Cuba. So my family, my nuclear family, and I immigrated at age 12 from rural Cuba to New Jersey. So I learned everything about the United States and about diversity in New Jersey as I was developing. In addition to that, I was in the Cuban Revolution and was one of the first pioneers of the 100% literacy campaign under Fidel Castro's priorities when he took over. So I come by all this work very honestly. I also coach. I do executive coaching and leadership coaching. And I always work with myself and other people about core values, and that the work that we do needs to be congruent with who we are and what our purpose in this world is, because we have one life, as far as we know, and therefore, how are we going to use it? If my work is not congruent, all the research shows what happens to our mental health, to our substance use, to our relationships, to our own dismantling of the imposter syndrome, et cetera, et cetera. So it is core and clear that for me and for anyone else to be able to be successful long term, they really need to align their work values with their core personal values. And for me, this is who I am. This is what I breathe. And this is exactly what I believe I was put on this earth for.
I believe you 100%. The clients that you work for, the organizations that you serve, what are they looking for when they bring you in?
Usually, first of all, they don't bring me in unless we've had a courageous conversation. I get a lot of calls and please submit a proposal. Would you train us on D&I? I went to a training that you did or a speaking that you did, and we want to bring you in. So I always have conversations and deny and do not apply for or refuse contracts where the organization is not willing to do long-term systemic and structural work in the organization to be able to accommodate the new initiatives of being engaged in D&I work. So without really looking at policy, without really looking at culture change, without implementing systemic and structural integrated practices to continue this work long term, folks are wasting their money and my time. I think it's really important. It's very clear. The research shows that D&I training by itself may feel good or bad depending on the experience for a certain period of time, but it has no sustainability. It creates no change in people's attitudes or behavior and does not yield any results that are measurable that can be attributed to engaging data. What does work is a real willingness to peel the layers of systemic organizational issues, including systemic racism and sexism and ageism and all those isms that we know, internalized homophobia, transphobia, all those pieces, to really see how their HR policy, how their interviews and questions, how they go through the interview search, what they do in like a blind interview process. So the chair of my board recommends their son or somebody's whatever, and that we keep perpetuating ourselves. So it's very clear that there's not many leaders of color in either for-profit or nonprofits. And when we have them, we don't last long. And that is systemic and structural. So if organizations are willing to look at themselves in the mirror, they're willing to review HR practices, they're willing at investing in staff to have what I call trust me enough to offend me circles, racial healing circles, panels that are going to speak and tell stories about their own experience and give advice as to how they need to be approached. If they're not willing to engage in not cultural competency, because none of us can be competent in anybody's culture, including our own. I'm a very different Cuban than most of the Cubans in Miami. So I can't speak for Cuban culture. So cultural competency is not anything that I'm either willing to do, but cultural humility allows the person to ask the open-ended questions that would let others teach us about their culture and about how they practice their culture and what feels respectful or disrespectful to them. Without doing all those work, without teaching coaching, without teaching the skills of courageous conversations, without really being able to engage frontline and leadership in real dialogue about power and privilege, all those things, whatever I bring to the table is not going to be sustainable, and it's not going to really yield the results that I believe most people really want. So I have a conversation with folks about what are you willing to do? What are the problems that you see? If this was to work, what outcome do you want? And then I make a proposal. I review strategic plans. I review previous trainings that they have done, initiatives. I do key informant interviews with frontline directors, supervisors, EDs, boards, donors, etc. And from that, I put all that together and design an individualized plan, work plan for that organization. I'm not cookie cutter, just like individuals. We're all at different organizations are at different stages of development. Some of us are at startup, even though we've been around for 15 years. Some of us have been stuck and haven't moved to thriving. We're just at that survival mode. I assess what the organizational development stage is, what the task asks for the next stage, who from their team is going to work with my team on co-creating the work and leading the work inside. And with some organizations, I'm there physically. For example, I am honored to have a year contract with the Muhammad Ali Center here in Louisville, and I'm there 2 days a week, right next to other people come in, have lunch, go to trainings, do interviews, do coaching, do training while I'm part of the Ali team, which is really great. I just finished doing that with Stockton, Ogden, and Keenan, which is a very fancy and bougie, white, very white law firm. And really, they were not having women as partners and on their board. And they needed to get updated. And I spent a year with them and having those conversations and all of that. And actually, I just heard a wonderful thing that their biggest competitor did not do the gender and race work, and they're out of business because people are really asking, what are you doing around this? And not giving out contracts and not hiring unless those things are happening and they're engaging in underserved communities and are having a representation at the table not just as attorney, but at every level of the organization. So I feel really proud of that work and really proud of them for taking on something that really ruffled an incredible amount of feathers. But they have an incredible leader who said, we need to do this work. It is not just the right thing to do. It is what we need to do in order to stay relevant. And boy, was he right. Was he right? This was before Breonna Taylor, before the third largest civil rights movement that we've had in this country, before Black Lives Matters. And when all those things happened, they were ready, they made statements, they were at the table, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So really proud of them and of that work. And the Muhammad Ali Center, it's Muhammad Ali. Everybody else has an orchestra and an actors and a ballet, but nobody else has Muhammad Ali except us in Louisville. So this organization, although it's 17 to 18 years old, it has really stayed at startup. It had really not developed because previous leadership had not done the work to engage in community. With the staff to really integrate Muhammad Ali's principles, to teach and train about who Muhammad Ali was and what he stood for and the backlash around that, not him as a boxer, but as a humanitarian, right? And as an activist and as a poet and a rapper. This guy is pretty amazing. So I was honored to be named a daughter of greatness in 2009 because of my anti-racism and sexist and gender justice work. So I've been committed to this work and to this organization. So when they put out a bid, they got a new courageous CEO, comes from Chicago, gets it. She looked around, she goes, oh no, I need help. And she put out a request for proposals. We bid, we got it. It has been a great partnership. I'm honored to be there. And they're really pivoting to most of the folks that will come into the center would be folks that from out of the country or out of the state that didn't have a lot of internal. Our own Louisvillians coming. That has really shifted. We did a Muhammad Ali Festival, and there were 4,000 locals at that event. So, really shifting to being at the center of community and getting staff to understand how to be an Ali ambassador, whether you're mopping the floors or whether you're running the organization. So, I hope that gives you some depth into the work
Yeah.
as to the why. And as to the value of being able to engage in long-term systemic and structural work, I always say my mission and the mission of Catapult is to harness human potential and to co-create systemic and sustainable systems change. So that's what we do. That's what I do. And if folks want a brochure version, I'm not your girl.
I think that's fair. And thank you, Marta, for elaborating on all of that. My question to you were talking a little bit about the lack of leaders of color. And I know you did a whole project around leading in color that was a podcast, and that has now morphed and evolved into something bigger. Can you talk a little bit about the Leading in Color project and the evolution of that?
When I really saw what I was the first Latina to be named commissioner for the state of Kentucky. There was one other woman of color, a black woman who was commissioner prior to me. Kentucky's been around a long time and we've had commissioners for a really long time. And then when I was CEO here in Louisville for the Center for Women and Families, it just, and I looked around at the partners and I looked around at how amazing Louisville is and how few leaders of color were. I'm a geek. I do my research. I was in academia for 17 years. I was the chair of Women and Gender Studies and the dean of Multicultural Student Affairs. I'd done this work, but I hadn't done the research as to why and what. And the what is we have very few leaders of color, and those who stay in private and non-profit, those who are hired don't stay for a very long period of time. We have three resignations right now going on nationally. So I won't get into that, but no, that's the truth nationally. So I decided that I was going to have a podcast where I was going to learn from leaders of color about what their experience was working in organizations. What were the micro and macro aggressions? What were the barriers? What were the challenges? What were the opportunities? What was their advice for those of us in HR and in leadership in order to not only recruit, but retain and develop leaders of color? So I did those interviews and they are beautiful. From that, I took their wisdom and their experience, and I developed a curriculum called Leading in Color. And then I had a multi-year contract with Metro United Way here of both in Kentucky and Indiana. And they were looking at changing their business model. They've always been a community chest. They gave out grants, and they were really looking at investing in underserved community and agencies led by leaders of color. And boy, you should have heard the uproar in the community and at the agency. So I did OD with them and leadership development. And part of that development was piloting a 1 year Leading in Color training. And so we did gender justice. We did queer work. We did racism work. We did poverty work. We did disability work, very inclusive. And then I had different associates do like racial healing, the history of racism, the policy, the laws, redlining, all of those kinds of things. And then for women, the ERA and what is not here and all of that. And then the sexual assault and the sexual harassment kinds of things. So all that work. And then with disabilities, the visible and uninvisible disabilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we piloted that work and then measure. We had them take a pre-test where exercises that they could do online in a module that was designed for them to take this module online and answer questions. And then when they answer incorrectly, it would have a learning piece. It would say, a lot of people think like you do. However, let me give you the example or the experience. So this is what the research says. So let me have John tell you a little bit about how that's not accurate for them, that kind of stuff. In the privacy of their own office, they can fail forward, which is what I called it. They can learn. And that was the primer. And then I started doing those virtual and in-person trainings for a year on all these issues. And then refreshers. And then we did an evaluation prior, and then they took the several evaluation at the end. And it was amazing in regards to watching the growth and development of the staff. And the ones that didn't grow and develop left. So that's really okay. We don't belong everywhere. I was offered a job for Procter and Gamble when I was doing some consulting work in Italy on cultural issues, because in Italy, everybody was drinking their coffee and talking about the olive oil. And in Cincinnati, these people were mad that these folks were not on time, right? So that was why they hired me. And I got to have all kinds of wonderful experience there. They offered me not a consultant gig, but actually a job being working D&I. And you know what? I wouldn't have lasted 2 days. I would have killed somebody or they would have fired me. So you need to know where you are going to be, have high impact, where you're going to be welcome and where you're going to have support for what you bring to the table. I don't have time to convince an employer that I'm the right person for the job, i.e., Governor Beshear, with this incredibly regressive legislature. He took the risk of hiring me to be his commissioner for social services for the state. The backlash when I would present to the legislature was huge because I wanted equity pay for my staff. I wanted to do equity audits. I wanted us to really look at self-care and employee wellness and secondary trauma. What the hell? We don't have time for this stuff. She's too passionate about this stuff. And if I didn't have a governor who said, we needed a revolution and we took Marta out of retirement because I believe that she's the one that institutionalized it for us, then I could do the work. Was it easy? No. Did it take everything I had? Yes. Was the state that I love, Kentucky, and these employees that have unrealistic expectations set on them, and this amazing governor, was all worth it. That, if I do not have your support, if you don't know who you bring into the table, I am an advocate, an activist, and a teacher first. CEO, commissioner, that's close. That's like RuPaul says, we come in naked and the rest of it is drag. That's drag. I can do drag really well. I can pass, but that's not what I want to do for a living and in any kind of contiguous ways. Finding the right place, making sure that you fit, being really honest and direct about who you are and what you bring to the table, asking for help, people giving you honest and direct feedback, evaluating every step of the way, and bringing everybody with you. I now have this group of folks who are the folks who do the maintenance, and they also do the security for the Muhammad Ali. And I asked them, who are you are now? And they say, we're the keepers of the legacy. That brings tears to my eyes. I'm not here to brush, to clean the floor. I'm not here to make sure that you don't get harassed when we do an event. So I call them the keepers of the legacy. And I kept calling them that to where now when I ask, that's what they say. So bringing everybody along, working with everybody, being really direct with the leadership about you're not showing up. You don't have the skill set to lead and manage organizational change. If you want to learn them, I'll teach them to you. They said, yes, we've went to 3 months of what it takes to lead and manage organizational change, then created a plan, a strategic plan for leadership about how they were going to integrate that in with their work, with their direct staff. So when you bid on something, you never know what's there. But I don't bid on the hours. I don't like billing for the hours. I bid on the deliverables. And in some contracts, I lose money. And in some contracts, I don't. And that's on me, not on them. So while we were doing this thing, all this HR stuff came up. I had to put one of my HR associates so that he can do the HR work. There was no extra cost to the agency. So we went from the CEO saying, consultants, oh my God, they just give you a PowerPoint and leave it. And I said, oh no, we roll up our sleeves. We get dirty with you. We're in the trenches and we'll hear until the deliverables are made. And I would not charge you extra for that. To now she goes, oh my God, this would have been another $30,000. And what are we going to do when you leave? And I said, that's okay. Just bury me in the museum in a little pine box and water me periodically. So we've gone from that to the value because we're there and we do the work and we don't walk away when it's hard and we don't expect them to do it alone. And I don't expect my staff to do it alone. It is co-creating systemic and organizational change, then evaluating and institutionalizing over and over again.
Marta, thank you for explaining all of that. I'm just overcome with this feeling of the keepers of the legacy. And I think that if more people thought about their work in that way, what is the legacy they're inheriting? What is the legacy they want to leave? What is the legacy they want to maintain? And really examining that could get us a whole lot further in this work.
Yeah.
Because we're all inheriting something. We're all maintaining
something.
Well,
what am I responsible for? The whole purpose of the Muhammad Ali Center is to keep Ali's legacy alive and vibrant and engage people in his principles. So it doesn't matter what I do, but what I'm here to do is the mission of this organization. And all of us have a mission in the organization. And I always encourage folks to do their own vision statement. What do you want your tombstone to say? And then work backwards, right? It's the same with organizations. And if there's not an alignment between the organizational values, the organizational mission and vision, and you, then let me help you, coach you to develop a 3-month plan out. So you're either in, and let me tell you what you need in order to be in, or out, and let me help you move out, and where do you want to go and where you belong? That those conversations need to happen. I love them. I think they're really great and they're really hard to have. And most of us do not have the ovaries to do them.
Marta, where can people find you if they want to learn more about your work?
Oh, my website is catapultingnow.com. So you can go there. And also I can put can give you my email, which is catapultingnow@gmail.com. And those are ways. And people are also welcome to call me, 859-492-8467. I do pro bono consultations. I do pre-assessments. I have coffee and chat meetings that people can schedule either virtually or in person before I make a proposal, before a memorandum of agreement, before we agree to work. And sometimes it's bless and relief. Release. And sometimes it's let's get to work. Let's see what this work looks like. And sometimes it's let me refer you to somebody who's willing to do the work and is better than me at this in regards to that. And so I'm really committed and invested in the potential of the individual, the team, and the organization and our community and creating communities of justice and really engaging in this incredibly needed, way overdue work.
Marta, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for being my friend,
You're welcome.
and thank you for blessing the world with your work.
Oh, thank you. That makes my heart sing and tears to my eyes. So thank you so much, Amy.
If you've enjoyed this episode, follow Lead at Any Level on LinkedIn and YouTube. Then join us for Including You video simulcast every Thursday at noon Eastern. Including You can also be enjoyed each week as part of the Living Corporate audio podcast series, available on all major podcast platforms. Learn more at living-corporate.com. Including You is brought to you in part by Lead at Any Level, a boutique training and consulting firm improving employee engagement and retention for companies that promote from within. Lead at Any Level. Leaders can be anywhere and should be everywhere. Learn more at leadatanylevel.com. Lead at Any Level and its logo are registered trademarks of Lead at Any Level LLC. The views and opinions of guests on our show do not necessarily reflect the positions of Lead at Any Level, Living Corporate, or the sponsors of Including You.
That's it for this week's episode of Including You. Be sure to join me next week when my guest will be Dr. Ted Samuel from Oberlin Chauncey.